The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you for downloading and checking us out this week. Kevin, last time
on Critical Hit,
you wrapped up a very fantastic game.
Oh, well, I'm glad you thought so. Yeah, what'd you guys think?
It was very enjoyable.
Dang. It was soul-crushingly entertaining.
That's great.
Yeah, because the things that you were doing were just like so many levels. It's like, oh, cool adventure game, and also, hey, social commentary, and also everything's on fire, and it was just wonderful.
Yeah, I did appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I was saying I did appreciate a lot of that social commentary and inside business stuff that people in the know, and the people that don't just still enjoyed the adventure. So
yeah, I will never forgive you for the episodes with the Jabubnans, however.
So I love the episodes with the Jabubnans.
I am forever scarred by my times in call centers, and you just like, I mean, oof.
Yeah, just raw.
Yeah, I mean, I am a project manager by trade. Now, I haven't had a meeting as bad as the Jabubnan meetings, but I have. They're sometimes pretty bad. A good buddy of mine, his job, he's like in logistics. I know he does a bunch of corporate meetings. So we just sat and brainstormed like things to say for, I don't know, an hour together. And that's where that episode came from. And I realized I'm just going to talk and say absolutely nothing the entire time.
Yeah.
Oof, yeah.
It's impressive.
It is. And you know, that, my that's version my of job. Hell. Oh, God. You have no idea how I've had that meeting. I have had that meeting where the general manager is in there and he feels like he needs to circle back on everything.
Yeah. At a pretty high level with Drifters, you know, originally, I was thinking this would be kind of Firefly-esque, but it definitely turned into more like Futurama, and that's great. I love Futurama. Futurama's hilarious. I was a little concerned about striking the tonal balance because it's weird, right? I want it to be fun. Like, I literally want you guys to have fun, and the podcast kind of comes out of that. I figure if we're having fun, people like to listen to it. But like, I didn't want it to be a big downer. But I did want there to have some sort of bite to it, right? Like, if it's not about anything, I don't know, that just wasn't doing it for me at the time. So making it both fun and funny, but also like kind of scathing and have some commentary was the goal anyway.
Yeah, I think you did a great job at it.
Yeah, it was remarkable.
I felt like it worked well for the times. I mean, I know when we signed you up for this, we weren't living through as interesting times as we wound up being, this being like a pandemic game, but I think like having a little bit of bite and absurdity worked pretty well for the absurd times we were living through.
Does anybody, Steven, do you remember the date of our first recording?
I can look and see.
I mean, time means nothing to me anymore. It's the 375th of March, 2019.
Oh, we are well past that. We're at like the 975th of March, 2019.
Yeah, well,
that's March 2020.
So,
I don't know why you guys stopped in 2019.
I was truly happy.
So as I'm looking in my archives, the first release of Drifters was Critical Hit number 578, season 1, episode 1. That came out on November 14th, 2020. Now, let me see if I can go back and find the actual recording.
A little earlier.
Yeah. Let me see. What did I say? 578?
Yes.
I do. Oh, let's see. I don't think I have it on my local drive. I think that's been up to a other drive, but I do know that 588 was January 29th, 2001. So, yeah, somewhere probably, or I seem to recall September, October of 2020 for some reason.
That sounds
right.
Like a number.
Yeah, it was dark times for the rebellion then. I really appreciated running this. Thank you guys for trusting me enough to just bring me on as a GM, like having never been on the show before. That was pretty cool. A lot of work. Rodrigo, I have no idea how you did this for years and years and years. Oh my goodness.
It knocked 20 years off his life, I'm sure of it.
Well, you know how you like got it like in your soul and you were like, I want to say something and I want to express it through this game.
Yeah.
I had that, but it was mostly how much these guys annoy me. I just tortured them for 10 years and that's how I kept warm.
Hurtful. I thought we were bros, man.
Let's go around really quick. Sam, what was your favorite part of this entire Drifter story?
Oh man, I think Muckrakers was really good. I think it just was such a great encapsulation of like the themes of the show. It's got to be somewhere between either that or the episode where we met Aeon Soljet in his horrible palace of horrors of being his very nice apartment. But like just the just everything about it made my skin crawl.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I think the Aeon Soljet part was, you know, it's when the villain finally reveals everything, you know, and spells it out for everyone, even though it's somewhat cryptic. I really like that part in any kind of story. So I think that was my favorite moments. But I think outside of the story plot elements, I think one of the things that I really liked was Rob's character, Amu, always wanting to collect all these new creatures that we would either run into or battle. And then you, Kevin, allowing that to happen and then making that an integral part of protecting the ship or coming in at the last minute to rescue the heroes, you know, or help out with the heroes. I think that stuff was really great.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all. And it was super fun. Yeah. Herman, a crate fiend, which I definitely designed to just be a random encounter because I thought, hey, this is cool. It can be it's a thing that can be a stowaway on the ship.
Yeah. Who Rob, other than the DM part? Saw exactly what I was going to do with that?
I think anyone who's played time. With you.
Yeah, Rob likes pets.
Yeah. Rob, what was your favorite part?
So I was
I'm kind of with you on that one. Like just Kevin actually allowing me to collect as many different pets as I could physically find.
Yeah, nice.
Like, I was not expecting you to try to keep the gremlins and be like, no, we're going to train you and weaponize you. I thought like those things were so mean, like they were so like annoying. I just assumed you guys would get rid of them, but like, nope. You're like, nope. They joined the menagerie, joined the team.
Yeah, no. Like,
okay, just how they are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All Amo's entire goal for joining Drifters was to make more friends.
I think when we started feeling out the world and seeing that the world, you know, I mean, you're right. It's like fun and action packed and stuff, but also very oppressive and very, you know, like sort of money and result oriented or whatever. I think it kind of galvanized us as the players. I was like, we're not going to be that, right? Yeah. We have to become the opposite of that. So it was like,
surrender to that, like with the creative being horribly evil.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, well, yeah, this is just what the gremlins are like. So we, you know, there's probably a place for them in this ship too.
This crazy, crazy world.
I love the ship being a ship of outcasts and, you know, this, obviously, you know, it's a trope, but it's a trope for a reason of like,
yeah.
Kind of found family and people who aren't fitting in with a world. But as you say, Rodrigo, like when the world's really bleak and dark and not friendly necessarily, at least there are large parts of it that aren't, then it makes more sense for you guys to kind of band together.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when we pitched Hecubina and Bangy, I think my word was actually like, I want them to be like the positive version of bullies. Like, like they will aggressively like build you up.
Yeah.
They're like, you should do this. Oh my God, you're so good at this. Why haven't you been doing this all along?
Gas you up. That's funny.
What was your favorite?
I really liked the team.
Yeah, Rodrigo, what was your favorite? Yeah, that worked out really well.
Yeah, definitely. My favorite part, I enjoyed so much of this game, but my favorite part actually was a lot of like the actual like mechanical expression of things when we were in, you know, it's like we did, I think, 3 races and each one was very different. And mechanically, there were like different things that we had to do in order to accomplish things. It as a caster, there are spells that don't have a lot of use in, I think, in a lot of campaigns, especially very fighty campaigns. But because there were often sort of these like side objectives in so many of the fighting episodes, you know, as an example, me being able to use disguise to circumvent some amount of damage. That's there because Kevin's a permissive game master, but also because he set up an encounter where like killing every single zombie wasn't the point, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where there are like goals and there are there are things in the way that you can use the mechanical expression of your character to overcome or to get around.
Matthew, what about you? What was the favorite part of yours?
The favorite part of the game ever, or the favorite part of the game that was yours? Because I still feel like when Vengi was in the cage and I decided that beastie mode would be funny, maybe the point
was
where
very
I was
good.
Just like,
that was A plus work.
I cannot top this. I'm just going to coast for the rest of the That's not true. But yeah, but I feel like for me, the best part of it was just how much fun it is to see Sam and Rodrigo playing off each other at a level of gaming where everybody is just like, oh, we're doing that? Okay. I mean, the team co-captain thing in game was really a lot, at least from my perspective, of our interactions as well, because they gave us a really strong lead to bounce off of, and everybody got to be, you know, I'm a combat hamster. I'm a ball with a camera on top. Hi, I'm the hologram from Red Dwarf. And, you know, we all got to do our cool things, and then we had that strong leadership, and they were just as much of weirdos as everybody else. I feel like, you know, it really came together. I don't know, and I love Critical Hit. I've always loved Critical Hit. I don't know if we've had a cast that is this much fun in this many different ways in any of our previous game systems. And we've done some great stuff.
I thought from my perspective, not knowing exactly how everyone was going to, you know, fit in and having to, you know, I played with Rico, I was really impressed with not just to congratulate you guys, but like, seriously, you know, it's 6 players, which is a lot. 6 players plus the DM, so 7 total people at the table. I thought the team co-captain thing was really cool because inherently, once there's team co-captains, like no one's really in charge. It's just it's almost like a joke, but it was nice because, you know, you guys could prod people along or, you know, have an idea or something like that. But like, seriously, all of you guys, I was really impressed with how everything worked. You seem to, you know, for a new system, everybody was pretty proficient. And that's actually beside point. What matters more is like, you knew how to, there's a couple of things I really like about this crew. You knew how to narratively like pass the ball around, and not hog the ball, but also like, you know, kind of let somebody else like shine for a moment, which is great. And then, maybe something that comes from, you know, being part of a podcast. And I will say, like, I almost want to take this. This is something I want to take out of this for my own home games. You know, I love it, playing games in general and chilling and chatting with my friends and all that good stuff. But I loved how, you know, you can do that for a little bit on Critical Hit, but you can't go on a 20-minute diatribe. Like, you have to get back to the point, you know? And people, you know, we show up, and we show up on time. Like, yeah, of course, there's scheduling. We have to work that out. Sometimes we cancel games here and there. But, like, by and large, like, people came, and they came ready, and they came ready to play. And I really love that. Sorry, I went ahead and took my turn.
it's a professional game.
It's your game, man. You get to take your turn.
Yeah.
You get six turns. You have six arms.
Well, I'm curious, Brian. You are kind of the quietest, both in the player and and character wise. But I think you were also the most versatile of everyone, right?
Yeah, I feel like that's a good benefit of being the operative. As yeah, you can be pretty much good at pretty much any skill.
Mm-hmm.
combat wise, they have like pretty particular niche of, you know, doing stealthy or, you know, weird acrobatic attacks or something, but
yeah. What was your favorite part of the game?
I mean, I really enjoyed the Quint Inside Out storyline. Some crazy stuff, a lot of fun references there. You know, I like the nods to other games that got mentioned and just all sorts of ridiculousness.
That was great. That
definitely thing. Yeah. I definitely praise for Kevin that he just goes for it.
Yeah.
it's like we're gonna incredible voyage this mother. I was like, all right, I guess we are. Let's go.
I've got a couple of emails where he pitches this to me, and I swear to God, my first thought was, oh, S word, he is biting off so much here. And I'm like, man, I'm game, and I know that the team is up for it. And I'm just like, if you pull this off, holy moly, and you pulled it off with aplomb. I really appreciated that. Although I'm really mad that it took almost 3 months for me to get you to say, my name is, so I could respond with, it doesn't matter what your name is. I think I spent half an episode trying to get you to say that during the volleyball game. And you wouldn't. You knew what I was doing. So I waited until you forgot.
Yeah, you got it.
I wasn't going to walk away from that. That had to be done. It was a moral imperative.
I appreciate you being open to that, Matthew, because, you know, obviously that puts that. There was a lot going on there, and you were very willing to, you know, have fun and be, you know, poke fun at, but like in a collaborative way where it's like, okay, we're inside a character's mind. What is that going to be like? And right. So, thanks for that, because, you know, there's a lot, you were kind of the star of the show there for a bit.
Well, and it never felt mean spirited, even, you know, when Steven was being mean spirited, it was in, you know,
I'm sorry, what?
It was in when you were taking shots at me during
that. You mean when everybody was taking shots at you during that?
Yes, but I've known you for 35 years and I forgive them. I mean, we knew each other when we were 18, Steven.
It says and you should Matthew know does about Steven.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It never felt like it was pointed. And I really appreciated that, even when you were doing things that were clearly, you know, let's poke a little fun at the underlying, you know, bits and pieces of the character. It never felt mean, and I like that.
The real smart thing about it is that, like, Quentin's also a robot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in Wreck-It Ralph, they start out making fun of video games, but then they go to, like, Chocolate World, and then they have a bunch of candy jokes. Like, that's kind of what it felt like, because it's like, yeah, we could make fun about, you know, being inside his brain, but also he's a robot, so there's all of these, like beep boop beep robot jokes and like, you know, old peripherals jokes that we can make. So it really worked out pretty well.
Yeah. So what did you guys think of Starfinder? This is obviously it's kind of based on the Pathfinder system, set in space. But I will say that we made it up to level 8 And we did a lot of things that you can find in Starfinder, but I've got the core rule book and the pilot book, and I think one or two other books from this system. And it feels like we barely scratched the surface of Starfinder, yeah. Kevin. I didn't want you to throw everything in it, but it's like I'm flipping through some of these pages and like, oh, this is a thing that you can do in Starfinder. I did not know that. And, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, one of the ideas I had going into this, believe it or not, this would be, I would say, probably one of my least mechanical games I've ever run. Like most narrative focused, because I thought that like narrative would play better, honestly, on the podcast. I thought people are going to update the story more, but the story's harder for me. The story, writing a story was much, much harder, and like writing dialogue and all that is harder for me than writing mechanics. I think, so I agree with you entirely, Stephen. We've just scratched the surface of Starfinder. There are things in the game like that I found that I really liked, and then there are things that I either ignored or didn't like, or we made impromptu house rule changes. So I could rattle off a couple of those real quick.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
I love Starship Combat. I thought Starship Combat was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I really liked that too.
Yeah.
And I feel like I said this before, but Starship Combat really is like an oddity when it comes to like Pathfinder subsystems. Uh-huh. And that it doesn't come with a lot of extra baggage, like different skills and feats to take on top of the normal ones you take anyways. It all just integrates with the skills that already exist.
Yeah. Unlike a lot of other games that I've seen, it neither feels like an afterthought, nor does it feel like, like you need to basically build your character for it.
Yeah.
I compare it to like the Spelljammer rules that came up for like ship to ship combat, and they're just like, we don't really care about that. It's just very funny in comparison.
I feel like a lot of times when we get into a new system, my first thought is, oh dear God, this is complicated. But there's also a feeling in, you know, this game, at least in Starfinder, that things were complicated for a reason. Things were complicated to either set a tone or support, you know, the game or the story that was being told. It wasn't necessarily something like, Rodrigo will tell you, I had the biggest problem trying to figure out why, as a level 10 fighter, I had spells when we were playing 4th edition. Mm-hmm. And finally just had to be like, they're not spells, they're your signature moves. And I'm like, oh, like SmackDown. And he's like, yeah, SmackDown versus Raw. So
you don't ever do two, well, sometimes you People do, but you would never do 2 6-1-9s in one.
Exactly. It's tough.
In one fight. Yeah.
That was probably my single favorite thing about Starfinder. I guess I also like how there's stamina and you can spend it made healing a little less necessary.
Yeah. Less urgent.
Because you can just spend a resolve and recover. And it's like, you have so much resolve. I guess maybe the game's designed if like you want to have like 4 encounters, 5 encounters in a day that are each bleeding you of a little bit of resolve. But like, that's just not the kind of game I run. Yeah. So, but I'm also okay with that. It just made it a little less scary. I did not like combat maneuvers. The idea that you have to hit your KAC +8. So let's run the math here. If you're hitting someone on a 9, okay, against their regular armor class, that means you've got a 60% chance of hitting them. That seems like a perfectly reasonable attack action. Okay, sure. So if you want to take the thing that they're holding out of their hand because, you know, they're going to blow up the ship, let me grab the detonator, that, because you have to target their KAC +8, instead of hitting on a 9, you're hitting on a 17. So instead of having a 60% chance of hitting, you have a 20% chance, because that +8 difficulty is 40% swing. Now that action is, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, people can take it, but it is what I call bad. It's a bad action because it's so unlikely to succeed that, like, you know, you're basically doing nothing. And I don't care for that.
Yeah, you absolutely have to build characters to trip or whatever, and then hope you don't fight something without legs.
Yeah, the game really Starfinder is based on Pathfinder, and Pathfinder is based on Dungeons and Dragons 3rd edition, and it carries certain things with it. Just I think because not a lot of thought was necessarily put into it, or if there was, because they agreed. And one of them is, we don't want you to do this. Like, we don't want you to be constantly disarming enemies and tripping them and pushing them and all this stuff. So it's going to be hard to do that, and you have to gear your character up to do that. And still, that geared up character at low levels is going to fail at that a lot. There are a few things, as much as like these combat maneuvers, where I look at it and I'm like, oh, the game doesn't want me to do this. One of the spells that I have, it's like a cone of energy that deals a little bit of damage, and then it's like, oh, and you can push them. And I was like, oh, so if they fail the save, I can push them? No. If they fail the save, they take damage, and then I can initiate a bull rush maneuver, substituting in my brains instead of, like, you know, my strength or whatever. And I'm like, I mean, I still took it because I got more spells than I needed anyway, but I was like, I tried to do it once. I think it kind of worked, but I'm like, just it's too much work. Like, the game doesn't actually want me to do this.
I want to go on a little bit of a rant about that too. I think you're absolutely right, Rodrigo, because coming out of the 3.0.3.5 Pathfinder world, you know, there are trip disarm builds and attacks of opportunity and yada yada yada. And like, I've played in games where that was a major feature, but I also understand the criticism of them. It can get oppressed. But like, let's be real here. There are other games. There are other systems. There are other ways of doing it. Like, if you look at Dungeons and Dragons 5, if you want to grapple somebody, make an athletics check. They oppose it with an athletics or acrobatics check, and then they're immobilized because you're basically holding them. It's not that complicated. You know, like, and it's also not that oppressive. Like, if you limit how bad things are, like, if prone doesn't give you advantage you know, a huge bonus to hit, then you can knock somebody prone, and it's more cinematic, as opposed to being like this tweaked out optimization build, which I think you're absolutely right, Rodrigo, is what they were trying to disincentivize. Whereas what they should have done been like, hey, because, like, I don't know, in game design theory, in my mind, what you want to do is say, what's a cool scene that, like, happens in a movie or you could imagine in a show, and then what are the rules necessary to let a player do that quickly and easily?
Yeah.
And I don't think combat maneuvers, but that's a rant.
Nope. You're really much better off just incorporating sort of combat maneuvers into the narration and then not bothering with them at all.
Yeah.
Rob, was Starfinder crunchy enough for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. I have, like we were talking before we sat down for tonight's session, I have like 20-some tabs open for various things. That's one of the reasons why I was able to know exactly what Herman could do, is because I still had the Crate Fiend tab open and available in case he became necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, no, I would happily play more Starfinder.
I really liked the rule you added in, which I feel like is very well supported by, say, like the first mate action of being able to spend resolve in order to take skill actions.
Yeah, because there's not that much to do with resolve yet.
Exactly.
I mean, I looked for things to do with resolve because I'm like, we get this huge pool of resolve and I'm a chode. I want to get they're just keep pouring resolve into my cup. I wanted something to spend it on. And the only thing that I could really spend it on other than healing was something that came with the subclass that I happened to pick. So yeah, definitely another thing is like give more to do with resolve. I mean, unless I miss something.
I had a couple of class abilities that were resolve based.
Yeah.
I love skills and I want to encourage them. If I could go back in time and start the game over, I would incorporate that resolve rule as a core rule of the game. Just because I like skills so much.
Well, and it again opens up that thing where, like, when you have alternative goals in an encounter to simply, like, keep throwing punches until something stops moving, that rule, that ability to also use your to attack and use a skill, is a lot stronger, and it's a lot more interesting and allows you to do a lot of things. You know, it's why in fourth edition they were like, well, like, we want to heal, we want to fight, let's just let healers, like, heal fight, right? Let's just let them use attacks, and then those attacks also heal their friends. Like, there's no reason to have to choose one or the other. There's no reason to have to choose between doing a cool skill action and also getting off a cool shot with your new cool shot class feature.
What'd you guys think of your classes?
Soldier is so good. No regrets ever.
I don't really have any regrets on mine, but I think when I went in, I was like, okay, if I'm going to be a pilot, then I need to know this, this, and this. And there were other things that I'm like, I will never need to know how to do this. And I kind of wish that I had put some points into some of my other skills. Like, I had medicine. So, if Amu, was out, I always had a medicine backup that I could do first aid on people that I never used. And I don't have my character sheet in front. Well, I do here because I always print it out. Medicine was 13. Of all my skill points. So it was like, good. It was like my second highest, or I'm sorry, my third highest skill outside of computers and piloting that I should have used, but I never did. So I felt at times like I fine-tuned or honed my character into a corner.
Over-specialization.
Yeah. Because it's like, well, if this is a race, I want to be the pilot. I want to be the best damn pilot out there. So let's put as much as I can into everything, like, piloting and computers.
You had a solid advantage in your piloting checks over everybody except the best Sheeran pilot on Team SPF.
Curse them Sheerans.
I like to think in my headcanon, like, they... honorary one, but they were also nice guys. I appreciate you guys not attacking them, because, like, what are you gonna do? But your pilot check was like the highest in the whole game.
But at times it just felt like
it was like the highest check in the whole game.
So I guess what I'm saying is most of the skills that I would do are, I mean, so you can look at this as, okay, did I max out my character so that it'd be to the maximum advantage, so that when it came to a piloting, the chances of me rolling bad on piloting were slim? And there were a few times where I did roll bad. But on average, my piloting was almost a guarantee.
Yeah.
But I feel like at times that also took some of the fun away from my rolls, because it's like, oh, crap, we've got to make this. We got to make this jump. Am I going to be able to do it? Let's see how the roll goes. And because you kind of knew that it was always going to, most of the time you knew it was going to be successful. And so I think for me, I kind of played myself in taking some of the fun out of my character, just because I knew that, you know, it wasn't critical. It goes back to, I was more than likely to make it than fail it. And so it was it was almost like an easy guarantee. So there was no suspense. There was no tension. And yes, I loved it every time we needed to use it, and I had the highest score. But at the same time, I was like, well, I kind of knew I was going to get that. So I guess I don't have really anything else to do for my turn.
Right.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You overspecialize and you're like, this is going to be great and I'm going to be good at it. And then you're like, this isn't as much fun as I thought.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now
I spent 10 years at trade school only to learn that I hate woodworking.
Exactly.
I have a complicated relationship with spellcasters in third edition type situations. I do not like to make in systems where combat is a thing. The worst thing for me is making a useless character So I tend to make characters that are very good at what they're supposed to be doing, and I have enough system knowledge to do that. As you know, as you can see from like Chema back in Weird Western, Chema was very good at spending a few turns charging up and then delivering buckets of damage. Heck, Yubino doesn't even need to charge up, but also he's not as good at a lot of other things. So yeah, it's like, that's one thing that I identified. I was like, what is Magic and Pathfinder good at? And it's weird. Or in Starfinder, it's weird. There's some things, but the thing that it's best at is dealing damage. So I was just like, okay, so I always have this in my pocket that I'm probably going to be dealing, you know, close to the most damage, possibly tied with, you know, whoever plays the rogue version in this system. The characters were fine. It's nice that they, like, the subclasses, there's like, hey, here's this subclass that's very much written out to be evil, where you, like, crush people's minds. And I'll be like, yeah, no, that sounds good. I'll do that. But I'll play the nicest version of this possible.
What did everybody else? Brian, Matthew, did you guys enjoy Starfinder?
Yeah,
it's your classes. Yeah,
yeah, your classes. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, it's pretty great being fairly effective, at least when it comes to skill checks.
Operative is so good.
Yeah, a little bit too good, almost.
I think I'm like maybe the worst operative in the world.
I think honestly,
you're an envoy, not an operative.
Yeah, you're an envoy. Right.
See,
yeah, but when you look at classes like Envoy and is it Engineer, whatever Bob was,
Mechanic,
like I think that those classes leave you floating a little bit more, especially when you compare them to classes like, let's face it, Fighter and Rogue that have been tested over the course of 15 iterations of this game.
Yeah,
that's like Soldier is good, Operative is good, is like. Listener, if you want to walk into a game of Starfinder and be immediately effective without having to do a lot of like gymnastics, unless you make a gymnastics operative,
soldier, mystic, operative, all of those are very
subject.
Solid. Yeah, yeah. I feel bad. I tend to always play like fighter or rogue because they're just so good. It's hard to argue with them.
And I'd like to play the weird esoteric character, but I mean, I'm not saying I forgot I had powers for about two or three levels. I'm just saying that I didn't use them. And so, you know, it came to a point where I'm like, I could use this awesome, cool power. And then I realized, no, I can't. So I just sort of threw my hands up and I was just like,
I think, cool stuff. I don't know. It was just from reading it because I haven't played one, but I've always felt that Envoy is underpowered. Or that it's underpowered for like the first like 5 levels, and then like once it starts, yeah. Once
I think on in like it, so here's how I tried to adjust for the fact that in my opinion I agree with you. Three of you were playing more mechanically powerful classes, and three of you were playing like classes that are more uniquely Starfinder. Mechanic, Envoy, and Biohacker, I all thought were mechanically weaker than the other three. Mm-hmm. But when I love skills, and I'm always going to encourage skills, so if skills are a good thing you can do, all three of those classes are good at their respective skills.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it helps a lot.
What do you think, Rob?
I think the Biohacker was fine with standing with the other three. I put the whole self-limiting thing going on with Amu doing, you know, having the Hippocratic Oath and everything. Jeez. Otherwise, there was like, oh, all sorts of nonsense that I could have been doing to like make combat way more miserable for our enemies.
And possibly for Kevin.
Yeah.
Absolutely, for Kevin.
Here's a nitpicky thing that I don't like about Starfinder, and I think it's because it's a thing that Paizo does. I hate that there's space goblins. I know we never. I just feels like Oh, yeah. Now we're going to create an RPG system that's set in space. But you know what we're going to do is bring over the goblins from the fantasy side and put them in space, too. But just something about that.
Well,
and I know
everything from the fantasy side.
Here, yeah.
I know, but
the same world.
Yeah, but specifically with the goblins, though. Just it is a Paizo thing because
of Paizo's iconic creatures.
Yeah. And that's the thing that I was just a little annoyed at. This
also, like, would you deny us the snot rocket or a mutie, which was I feel like the moment in which Matthew realized what he was in for with Kevin?
Yeah, no, that I mean it's fine as it plays out, but it's just like when I first started reading through the Starfinder system and I saw space goblins, I just eye rolled and I was like, okay, well, it is Paizo, and they do put that in every single one of their games, but it was still kind of like, eh.
I was strongly tempted.
Pitch a goblin.
Yeah.
What's that?
I'm a little upset I didn't pitch a goblin.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was strongly considering it.
Yeah. Like, I definitely thought about the fantasy races, but then I was like, oh, nobody's talking about making a human. So there has to be at least one person who's not wearing makeup or prosthetics.
Have one human guy. Yeah. See, and that the mutie situation. Is
almost constantly wearing makeup, though?
That's true.
Yes, but only to highlight his eyes.
I feel like Mutie was the point where I can't remember if we were still in the is Quentin or isn't Quentin a Quisling set, but that's the point where I honestly thought for a minute that I could totally be evil in this game, because that Mutie thing where, you know, Mutie was like, you are a friend, and then Quentin literally got him killed on purpose. I'm like, oh yeah, I could totally be a jerk, but then it didn't really work thematically. You know, so I'm just like,
I
was really happy with that, by the way, Matthew.
What's that? Not being evil? Or being evil?
No, how you approach the whole thing. I put you in a weird position as a corporate agent. Like, seriously, relative to the other five people, I know that in a lot of situations, if you put a random person in a position where they can betray party, I have literally seen that end games, and you got what I was laying down. So you were able to like play a little bit on the line, but this was okay with you playing it on the line for a bit. But you quickly determined, it's like, well, I could have all these people who are awesome and my friends, or these people who don't care about me at all.
These people. So, well, yeah,
no, I appreciate your handling of it.
I'm not by any means, I am not the guy who understands the game systems, but I'll tell you one thing. I was raised by a 22 inch Magnavox television. I understand dramatic moments. Yeah. That's what I do. That's why I'm still on the show.
Yeah. Honestly, you know, you asked how I could have done that for 10 years. And that's the real reason, is actually that this crew is very genre savvy. And also very aware of like narrative beats and archetypes and things like that. So that makes telling a story a lot easier. Like anytime I'd be like, okay, I know we're sort of heading this direction, but we're going to maybe move in this direction instead. Everybody tends to jump and just be like, okay, where does this framework put my character now? I'll do this. Mm-hmm. And really move about it very sort of very intelligently within sort of like that landscape.
Yeah. Kevin, you did a fantastic job with this game. Loved it a lot. Feedback from audiences. They seem to love it as well. You and Sam will not be joining us in future episodes of Critical Hit. I know I've mentioned it casually here and there in bits and pieces of Critical Hit. And I know that Sam has talked about it on Twitter, but would you guys care to just talk a little bit about your next big adventure that you're going on?
We're moving to Amsterdam.
Woohoo!
Whoa.
Tired of the bad drugs in America. They want to get the good drugs.
Steven!
What? It's true.
We actually have all the good drugs here in Chicago, so it's mostly just we. Kevin had a really cool job opportunity, and we have the chance to go explore Europe.
Which I think is a fantastic time, and I think hope that you guys are works out great for you guys. It's
we're
a
really
fantastic,
excited.
Fantastic time. Yeah. So literally, listeners, by the time you hear this episode, they're already in Amsterdam. That's true. They are, at the time of this recording, they have about a week and a half before they take off. So, yeah, we were pushing the end of this campaign to the wire.
Right.
it was getting kind of nervous. I was getting kind of nervous on the back end, but I think this is a fantastic opportunity, and I'm glad that you decided to take it, Kevin.
Thanks. Yeah, we're really excited. I'm really excited. It's scary. It's fun. You know, we'll tell you guys about it when we get there.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, I'm certainly not planning on you know, you've got other Critical Hit games scheduled and stuff like that. But I won't say never again if you need, like, I don't know, a three shot.
Are you gonna be up for a 3 a.m. Call?
You know, who knows? We'll work that out later. But yeah, This was a blast, Stephen. I didn't know exactly what I was signing up for. I mean, I kind of knew because Sam had been doing it for a while, but I didn't expect it to be anywhere near as much fun as it was.
Yeah, I just want to be sappy.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I want to be sappy too, and thank you all for all your time with me in the Void Saga and Weird Western and obviously Drifters and Sentinels and all the other games. You know, when I hadn't spoken to Rodrigo since he graduated from college, and so when he was like, "Hey, you want to play some Fourth Ed?" and I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, that sounds fun." And it's been, I don't know, I think 7 years now, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, which is wild to think back of. So I thank you guys all so much for welcoming me and welcoming Kevin and letting, you know, letting me play and letting both of us run. And then also wanted to just thank all the listeners for being so nice.
Yeah. Well, you will be missed, and Kevin, you will be missed very much. So thank you for all the hours and months and years of entertainment that you have provided us. I know people are always asking, is Kevin online somewhere? And the answer is no, because Kevin's smart.
He's on the Discord.
Yeah, I was going to say, but
Critical Hit Discord.
Head over to the Major Spoilers Discord in the Critical Hit channel. Kevin will show up and answer questions and chat with people, too. So do head over there and take advantage of that. Just realize that there is a time shift, but I also realize that, you know, a lot of our super active spoilerites are in Germany and Norway and Sweden.
We're kind of big in Europe, so you guys might actually run into spoilerites over there.
Yeah. So So Germo and Lagnus
want to, you know, I don't know, give me advice, both of us advice on where we should go and eat and drink. I would love to hear it.
Yeah, and if we have any specific Amsterdam spoilerites out there listening, do reach out to Sam. Sam, what's your Twitter so people can reach out to you? Because I'm sure you're still going to keep
Samantha Nelson one. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm sure you're going to keep that. And if you want to reach out to Kevin, get into our Discord, into Critical Hit, and he's hanging around there occasionally. So go and check that out. We wish you all the best of luck. You guys are fantastic. You're going to go far and do great things, and sad to see you both go. And dear listeners, we are sad to see you go this week, but we've got new adventures just around the corner. How's it going to turn out? I have no idea, unless, of course, you've been listening to the GM Roundtable these last couple of weeks and you know what's going on behind the scenes. So I'm kind of interested
in the players.
You definitely. That's the whole point. And I think I think that's going to be something interesting and new, because, you know, we've done, what was that first time that I GM'd a game, Rodrigo? What do we call that?
Game Master's Workshop.
The Game Master's Workshop. We did that. And that was kind of this unique look at what it takes to build this. And then, of course, we've had the GM Roundtable for a couple of years for our patrons, where it's a show that we talk about, here are challenges that GMs face and how to overcome them. Now you actually are going to hear me build the game week to week. Soliciting feedback from Dr. Brad Will, getting some insight, talking about challenges, talking about problems from previous episodes, and then building the next thing. So for those of you who want a true behind the scenes look at, you know, what goes on inside the GM's mind as they are building it, or if you just want to see a disaster in the making, definitely check out the GM Roundtable over there on the Major Spoilers Patreon page. So I'm very excited to see how this comes out. So For all of us here at Major Spoilers and all of us here around the virtual table at Critical Hit, thank you so much for checking us out. We will see you again very soon. And until then, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.